What's up, heroes? Welcome to episode 25 of the Producer Life podcast. Today, we continue our conversation with Sixth Street Music, also known as Richard Wang, a Minnesota-grown, Los Angeles-based music producer and performer. If you missed the first part of this episode, make sure you go back and check out episode 24. In 2018, Richard joined the Producer Dojo, and since then has had multiple original tracks featured on monthly mixtapes, and even had three songs featured on NBC's World of Dance mixtape. His first EP, Neon District, hit number 3 overall on Beatport, with singles hitting number 1 in various genres, including trap, dubstep, and electronica. He recently released a new single, Eagles, with his girlfriend Liz Besler, who provided the vocals. In this interview, we talk about his favorite social media platforms, his unusual education background, thoughts on touring overseas, how he's using Patreon, his approach to mentoring, and the challenge of self-doubt.
And I think part of that, too, is like the self-doubt that our music is good enough. And that's totally something that I struggle with all the time. It's like I hear my music and some of it excites me, but some of it's like, man, is this good? Is this trash? I don't know.
But first, cue the intro music. So with all the different platforms we've talked about, obviously you're a producer, so you're on Spotify, you're on SoundCloud, you've got TikTok, you've got Twitch, you mentioned Instagram, I know you're on Twitter also. Which platforms are you having the most success with, and why do you think that is?
That's a good question. Well, if I had to recommend two platforms that I think are the most useful for producers these days, I think Spotify and TikTok are the two major platforms that people should be focusing on. Because even with Spotify, it's an algorithm-based platform. So if you can give Spotify the right information and you can give Spotify the right indicators that your song is a high-quality song, they will push it out to new listeners on their Discover Weekly algorithmic playlists. So there's a lot of power there as well. We've already talked about TikTok. For me, of course, I wish there was, obviously Twitch has been really big for me in terms of connecting with this like broader producer audience and connecting with other vocalists and musicians. I think for me, I'm pushing on all fronts and seeing if there's one that really, really takes off. I'm going to invest extra time and energy into that one because I'm growing a little bit in all of them. But there's not one right now that's like, oh, this is like the one that is blowing up right now. So, I'm pushing in all fronts.
You know, sometimes a social media platform will go away or your account will get banned or you'll get blocked. And All of a sudden, if that's where everything is, you've lost your following. So having some diversity there is good.
Yeah. And if something like goes out of style or like, for example, SoundCloud used to be 3 years ago, like the place where people were getting discovered, the numbers there really, really mattered, but things come and go with the market. I don't think TikTok is going to be around forever. So having a way to convert your followers into, say, an email list where it's not just bound by a particular platform is a great way to have like the longevity of your followers. So that way your followers don't become obsolete, you know?
You're a choreographer. That was your original training in college?
In college, I was actually a pre-med student, believe it or not.
In
college, I studied human biology and kinesiology. And then I sort of went to, I loved dance. And my junior year, I decided I want to pursue dance and choreography as a profession. So I finished my degree in science, but I actually jumped into the whole dance world after college.
Wow, that's quite a transition. How did family and friends take that?
Yeah, it took them a little while to get used to that for sure, because my parents were fully expecting me to go to either med school or go to like engineering school or something like that after college. And I'd always been interested in the arts. I've been playing music my whole life and I've been dancing my whole life. So I joined a dance crew in college, and all my free time when I wasn't studying for classes was at this dance crew rehearsal. And I was like choreographing in my free time, absolutely in love with it. So when I told my parents that I wanted to pursue dance professionally after college, they were in shock for a while because they didn't have the framework as to what that possibly could look like. But over the years, I've been dancing professionally for about 7 years now. So it's been a long time. And over the years, they saw that I could pay my own bills. They saw that I was thriving and I was happy and I was doing these dream jobs and stuff. They eventually came around and they supported my dreams. So I'm really grateful to have supportive parents.
That's phenomenal. How has being a dancer first informed your music career?
Yeah, I actually give a lot of credit to sort of how to navigate the industry and what's important business-wise in music to my experience in dance and choreography. They're very similar in a lot of ways, totally different markets, but in terms of how you market yourself, how to monetize your skills, branding, and sort of taking care of your public image, those are all things that you learn as an entertainer, whether you're an actor, whether you're a dancer or choreographer. Those skills translated straight into music. So often when people come into music, they come in with no idea as to how the industry works or how to navigate and move forwards in the industry. But I feel like I'm very lucky to have been a dancer first. So I know that like it's cutthroat, it's hard, you know, you can be down yourself, but these are things that I've experienced before in my dance life before I got into music.
Okay, terrific. So you made a major change in terms of the direction of your life, and then we all got thrown this curveball with the pandemic. How have things changed for you since COVID-19, and how are you adapting your music and dancing and teaching careers to the pandemic?
Yeah, so if I had to split up into like two different worlds, my dance and choreography life versus my music producer life, my dance life was significantly impacted because I was about to go on a international trip to Saudi Arabia to work on an opening ceremony of a job for months, right as COVID was about to happen. So this Wow. was like the biggest stress of my life because I wanted to still take the risk to go overseas. And the rehearsals were actually in Milan, Italy, where at that time it was really, really bad there. Like the hotspots were blowing up all over the place there, but I still really wanted to do this dream job. So for weeks I was like torn. I said yes to the job, and then I was like, oh man, this is like getting really bad. Do I still go to this job or not? So my dance career, I missed out on a huge opportunity there, which it was the right call at the end of the day, given how bad the whole thing actually turned into. But yeah, I think that like for a lot of live events and for a lot of, even for DJs too, but for like dancers and choreographers, all these opportunities were just stopped dead cold. And lots of shows were canceled. My friends that were working on cruises as dancers, they had to come back home. So yeah, dance took a big hit and I lost a really big opportunity there. But at the same time, with my music career, nothing changed. Because for me, I'm not at a point in my music career where I am touring as a DJ. And as a performer, I am building my audience, building my numbers as a music producer. So all my work, which is on my laptop and writing music and focusing on my releases and emails, my life at home as a producer had not changed at all. So COVID, even though it impacted my dance life, I just focused all my energy into writing more music. So I feel like I've been as busy as ever.
So in some ways, it's kind of accelerated your producer side, your producer career.
Yes, absolutely. If I was gone for 2 months on this job in Saudi Arabia, then that's 2 months of not writing music. So all this extra time, I could focus on working on music.
Okay. Back in December, you went to India. Was that dance related as well, or was that vacation?
That was dance related.
Awesome.
Yeah, I was in Mumbai. Both me and Liz, actually. One of my mentors and my teachers back in college, his name was Nikos. He was actually one of the biggest inspirations why I chose to pursue the arts in the first place. He brought us both on board for a job in India, in Mumbai, and it was a life-changing experience. It was amazing.
What were your most poignant memories from India?
Oh my gosh. When you work so hard on a project and a show for a whole month of nonstop rehearsals, like literally no breaks, you wake up and you sleep and you breathe the show. To see the show come together on show day without a hitch is the best feeling in the world. And so that was like one of my proudest moments. After the show was over, Liz and I went to Thailand to go travel for a little bit. And yeah, there was an experience where she almost got killed by an elephant. So that was pretty memorable.
Wow.
Yeah, but obviously she's fine. But it was a pretty scary moment. We went to an elephant sanctuary, and we were like feeding the elephants and making the elephants like power bars and like really cool things. And it was a really magical experience. But then this one elephant that we were bathing in the river decided to like sort of run up the hill, and Liz happened to be standing there. So it wasn't like the elephant was like trying to kill her, but it just happened to be running directly at her. And she like just jumped out of the way at the right time. So it was a pretty scary moment for both of us. But it was a memorable one for sure. So that's a story that we will definitely hold on to for the rest of our lives.
Yeah. Was the transition back to the United States difficult after being gone for several weeks?
Yeah, we were gone for a total of 2 months. Coming back after experience like that, it like just a overseas experience for 8 weeks, you really miss home. For me, the 4 week period is when I feel like I miss home the most. I get really homesick after 4 weeks, but we travel for an additional 4 weeks. And then coming back is weird because you feel like you're a different person. You experience so much when you're overseas, especially when you're working at that capacity. You come back like older. I feel like we aged a year in those 2 months. So it was a little bit weird getting back to the swing of things.
When you say age, do you mean like maturity or just being physically tired after being gone that long? Or
both.
What do you mean?
Both. Okay. Definitely both. The stress of the job. Physically, you're like so stressed and therefore you age, and also maturity. You're like, you just come back a stronger person. For sure.
You've recently started a Patreon account.
Yep.
How is that going? And for producers that are thinking about launching a Patreon account, what advice can you offer?
Yeah. So Patreon is kind of a place where like super fans, friends and family have a way to support you on a monthly basis for kind of like exclusive special content. So you'll see lots of YouTube channels. They start a Patreon account for people who really love their content. And people can either pledge a monthly amount or they can pledge like a per project amount. So like if you make a video, for example, I might pledge $5 per video to, I don't know, Andrew Huang or something like that. And yeah, so Patreon is really powerful for just like finding it gives a place where super fans and supporters can actually give you support, you know, because a lot of people, like a lot of content that you see on YouTube and even music is people consider like free content. But there are people who are definitely willing to support creators, and Patreon is a good place for that. So I especially think it's really great for friends and family because family is always down to support. They just don't really know how. And it's kind of weird to Venmo $200 to somebody. It's just cooler to have like a place where they can support you.
Huh, that's an interesting thought. It kind of lowers the social barrier for.
Yeah, and Patreon is definitely a place too where like part of the perks too is one of the reasons why people would want to jump on there. So for me, all my patrons on Patreon get early access and sneak peeks to all my music. So whether it's like a first draft of a song that I'm excited about, I post it on there. So they're in the loop about all my music before it's actually released to the public. So exclusive content is a great way to get people to sort of jump in on your Patreon.
Good. What's next for you?
Ooh. Well, right now I'm at a position in my career where I'm really looking to grow my audience and my online presence and really kind of my numbers for people who are listening to my music. So one of the ways that I see that happening is to start to sign more and more releases with bigger and bigger labels. I know the first time I released my EP through the Producer Dojo, it was a huge step for me. And like the dojo had taught me so much about like production and how to make my sound cleaner and how to mix and master my own stuff. But as I kind of grow as a producer, I want to sort of sign my stuff with like my dream labels. You know, I think about labels like Proximity, labels like Seeking Blue, Ophelia. These are all sort of like future based melodic labels that I really love a lot. Once I kind of get track signed on there, they have huge audiences that will see Sixth Street for the first time and then probably become part of my fan base. So right now it's just writing music that can get to that level and that quality to get them signed.
You've toured internationally as a dancer. When are you going to be ready to start playing out and performing your music for live audiences?
I am ready at any moment. I would love to go now, you know. I mean, obviously things are shut down for a little while. Honestly, live shows and stuff, I think it's going to be a really beautiful thing once the whole show comes together. My happy place, though, in music is writing music and the production side of things. Whenever I've had a live show last year, for example, it stresses me out for like weeks and weeks. So I'm thinking about the show. I'm like prepping transitions. I'm like prepping songs and stuff like that. But as much as I love live shows and I want my show to be amazing, my happy place is production. So I'm grateful that I can just write music now for as long as I possibly can before things really take off.
That's interesting that you find the production side so fulfilling, because clearly as a dancer, you really enjoyed the performance side and being in front of people and preparing for the show.
Yeah. I mean, even with dance, this is a lesson that I learned through dance as well. I originally got into dance because I loved choreography and I love getting lost in the song and creating movement to the song that I was excited about that conveyed the song more. My passion was the creation side of dance. I sort of lost myself in the dance industry because I was doing lots of dance jobs where I was no longer creating. I was just performing. And I sort of burnt myself out by doing that. And I sort of forgot my love for choreography through doing all these dance jobs. So even in dance, I've always been a person who loved to create. And that's something I'm trying to hold on to in my music career, is I don't want to pick up jobs that are just jobs for money. I want to focus on the creative side because that's what gives me the most life.
Okay. That sounds like the common denominator across your passions is the process of bringing something new into existence.
Yes. There's something about when something clicks about a song and something like evokes emotion with the chords that I write. I'm like, my girlfriend is always joking that I'm in the corner just like hype and like laughing and like having the time of my life whenever I'm writing music. And she's always like, that's when you seem the most alive. And it's true. Like that moment when everything clicks is so much fun.
Yeah. I love that feeling when you get goosebumps to a song, whether it's somebody else's or your own, especially your own,
especially your own.
First time the hairs on your arm stand up is just an amazing feeling.
Yeah. Once something works and you're like auditioning different ideas and then something clicks and you made it, you're like, I did that. Holy moly. I don't even know how I did it, but it's the best feeling in the world.
You're doing a lot of teaching and you're doing a lot of track feedback. Talk to me about your process for coaching and mentoring people, either in the dojo or outside the dojo.
Yeah. So I've been teaching for a whole year now, and I think I've learned a lot about listening to where they're at in their music career and then trying to just give the next step. And it's difficult because music, especially in the dojo when you're teaching, people are coming into the sessions at like various levels, from like complete beginners to like people who are better than me, all the way. And then also topically, like you can talk about music feedback, you could talk about mixing and mastering, you could talk about music business. So it's really asking the question, like, what do they want out of this session and how can I give a couple steps or my personal feedback to help them on the journey? So I really try to listen to like, what do you want from the session, and make sure that they walk away with one concrete sort of tip or like one concrete lesson that they can apply to their own journey.
Okay. Sounds terrific. Sounds like a great process, sort of a needs analysis and then come to them where they are.
Yeah. And it's crazy because like the music industry is such a three-dimensional thing. I like want to cover so many things in one session, but like just one step at a time, one pivotal tip, hopefully that helps in their journey, you know?
Yeah. And I was glad to hear that you also talk about the marketing side of things, because, you know, as I've been going through dojo materials, there's tons of material on the production side of the house, but there's not nearly as much, apart from a few talks about branding, that deal with the marketing side. And you seem very savvy about that. So I'm sure your students really appreciate the marketing tips as well.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's something that I took from my dance career is once you have the music locked down, that's basically your product, right? You need to have a killer product first before you start thinking about the marketing. But you need to know how to market, because as an entrepreneur, you have to think about how to get your product in front of the right people. Otherwise, if you're not trying to make a career out of music and you love just writing music for yourself and putting it out like for your audience, that's totally fine. But in terms of growth, it's basically running a small business. And you have to think like an entrepreneur to sort of grow your small business.
Yeah, I talked with Captain about that a couple of episodes prior, and he was talking about, you know, investing in advertising dollars and that sort of thing. And, you know, it strikes me as amusing, producers that I talk to, you know, most of us will drop $100 on a plugin without a thought if it's on sale. But, you know, the idea of spending money on advertising is, it's a harder sell for most producers, you know?
Yeah. And I think part of that too is like the self-doubt that our music is good enough. And that's totally something that I struggle with all the time. It's like, I hear my music and some of it excites me, but some of it's like, man, is this good? Is this trash? I don't know. So I think the self-doubt is why it's a lot less risky to buy a plugin, because it's going to help you improve, versus it's risky to put $100 in marketing dollars and be like, well, if my music is trash, then it doesn't matter how much money you put into music or into advertisements, it's not going to give you any return, you know? I think that's the self-doubt, where it's like, once you feel confident in your ability as a producer and you're making stuff that is really like getting great feedback from a lot of people, then it makes sense to put money into advertising to push your product to new people. I think some people try to jump the gun and they focus on the marketing and the advertisements too early, before their music is at a level where it's like, this is a top quality song. If the music isn't there yet, it doesn't matter how much marketing or like Instagram or TikTok videos you make, it's not going to make up for bad music, basically.
Like you were talking about, the music is the product. You have to have that first before you start trying to sell it to people.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the music, it's like it's a pretty big spectrum in terms of like what is like good music versus like extraordinary music. But the sort of way that I like to sort of judge it is that I think Seth Godin talked about this in one of his marketing episodes or something. But if you have like 10 people who are like your diehard supporters or diehard fans, if you have a track and you send it to your top 10 diehard supporters, if they're not like sharing it and telling all their friends about it, then the product just isn't good enough. Because there's no reason why your top 10 diehard supporters wouldn't want to show off this killer product to their friends if they're like your diehard supporters. So I think one of the best ways to sort of like test your product is send it to your top 10 people and then see if they're like sharing it to all their friends. Because if not, like maybe the product isn't good enough and got to get back to training, you know?
Yeah, that's great advice. You've mentioned Seth Godin and you've talked about, it sounds like you're very well read. Are there some favorite books from a marketing perspective that you've got? Are there podcasts you listen to? What would you recommend to other producers for professional development?
Yeah. So one thing that I turn to pretty often is I'm subscribed to this one app called Blinkist, I think is what it's called. And Seth Godin has like a 2-minute marketing blurb like every week or something like that. So I'm ever just like sitting and eating a meal, I just turn on some Seth Godin and listen to him talk about marketing. But he's always got some great marketing tips. There's also this book that I got for like $1 called 4D Songwriter. And that one too is a really comprehensive look at what it means to be a musician in this day and age. Because it's a lot more four-dimensional, I guess, than just writing good music. So that's definitely an ebook that I recommend, 4D Songwriter.
Okay. Terrific. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'll offer one to you. If you're a fan of sort of the short form advice and tips, I had Wade Sutton with the 6-Minute Music Business podcast on early on in this podcast, and he does a great job offering very concrete, actionable thoughts about the music industry and marketing. And typically his episodes are about 6 minutes. He also tries to sort of be the Howard Dern of the music marketing. So, you know, he has a very comedic style, which makes it easy to listen to. So.
What's it called? 6-Minute Podcast?
6-Minute Music Business Podcast.
Got it. Okay.
With Wade Sutton. And I'll shoot you a note. But yeah, he's really good, offers great advice, and very entertaining to listen to. And again, very short form.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'll definitely check that out afterwards. I'm always looking for more music marketing podcasts whenever I'm like sitting on a plane or something. You could download a bunch and just kind of crush through a bunch of them. So yeah, I'll definitely check it out.
Yep. That's a good one. So where would you like people to go to check out your music and learn more about you?
Yeah. So if you look up Sixth Street Music on most platforms, I'll be on a lot of them, whether it's Instagram or Twitter. But I think the thing that helps me out the most is if you want to check out my music on my Spotify, if you just look up Sixth Street, Hit the follow button. The followers on Spotify really helped me out a lot. So if you want to check out my music, definitely check out my Spotify.
Awesome. I'll make sure links in the show notes. And again, any parting thoughts for the audience?
Ooh, parting thoughts. If you are making music, never forget why you got into it. I think I heard Mr. Bill say this, but as you get better and better at writing music, your time gets pulled away from Ableton. As you kind of like get more into teaching and get more into performing and stuff like that, often the better you get at Ableton, the better you get at production, your career will take you away from production. So always find time for yourself to keep on creating. Otherwise, it's easy to lose all that time to the career, you know?
Good parting thoughts. So Richard, I really appreciate your time tonight, and best of luck to you and Liz. And again, thank you.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate the time.
So here are some of my key takeaways from this week. His top two recommended platforms, Spotify, not surprising, and TikTok, something I've got to get more into. Follow your passions and look for ways to leverage your background, regardless of what it is. Patreon's a great place to enable your super fans, friends, and family to support you. Many people want to support you, but Patreon just gives them a convenient platform to do so. Make sure your music is really good before you start putting dollars into marketing. How do you know when the time's right? Well, try sending it to 10 of your top fans. If they don't love it and are excited about sharing it, you're probably too early to spend money on advertising. Always keep learning, not just about music production, but also about marketing. In particular, he recommends a book called The 4D Songwriter. He recommends Seth Godin and the Blinkist app. I'll have links to all those in the show notes. Just head over to producerlifepodcast.com and look for episode 25. So a couple of quick updates on what I've been working on. I've got a new mashup that I'm working on that I should be dropping in the next couple of weeks. I'm still working on the mix for that, but I'm excited to share it with you. I'm also working on a melodic trance track. I really love melodic trance, and so I'm excited about trying this genre. I'm also taking the Armin van Buuren masterclass, which I'll try to review here in the next couple of weeks. So those two are working kind of hand in hand. I also keep working on my live stream. I really believe in the Japanese concept of Kaizen, which is basically an idea that you make small incremental improvements over time. Since I last provided an update, I've added a Flow Artist video clips, Sure Why Not, that's S-H-O-R-E, Why Not, over on Instagram. She's been providing videos. I also want to add some dancers. I'm going for this rave / festival feel in my live stream, so I'm excited about that. I'm also adding more distribution platforms. So I'm using Restream.io to syndicate my content out to multiple different locations. I started off with just Twitch, YouTube, and Mixer. I have since added Mixcloud, and I also added my personal Facebook page last week, which was a huge success. I had 85 people listening just from Facebook alone, so that was a big win. Finally, I'm experimenting with controlling Resolume, which handles all my visuals, directly from Ableton Live. What I'm trying to get to is a point where I can control everything from my APC 40 Mark II, not only Ableton and the audio mixing, but also the visuals. And I think I'm getting close to that, which is going to free up a lot of screen space. Hey, if you're enjoying this podcast, please smash the subscribe button and leave a review wherever you're listening. It would really help me to bring this podcast to more listeners. So, until next week, this is the House Ninja, reminding you to be someone's hero today.